And good morning. It is 10 a.m. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and it is time once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and today, very happy to be joined in the studio with the CEO of Central Peninsula Hospital, Rick Davis. Rick is with us this morning. Thanks so much for coming in, Rick. Good to see you.
My pleasure, Shaylin. Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. And of course, healthcare, what's going on at Central Peninsula Hospital, a huge, broad topic. I'm sure we won't have any trouble making it through this hour. Of course, if you have questions about what's going on at Central Peninsula Hospital, questions maybe about healthcare, sort of more in general, we'd love to have you in on the conversation as well. Give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414, or you can reach out on our Facebook page, KDLL. Search for us there. We'll be checking that throughout the program as well. But wanted to get into it this morning. Rick, again, last night at the Borough Assembly meeting, there was supposed to be kind of some finishing touches on the agenda that it was laid down, but an ordinance sort of wrapping up some revenue bonds for some big expansion work at the hospital, and it's the new obstetrics wing and the catheterization lab, and I guess we'll maybe just start there with kind of the finances on that and what the hospital is looking to get done and where we're at with those things.
Sure. So we've got a really interesting project that's just getting started right now. We're building a cardiac cath lab. It's actually a combination lab for interventional radiology and cardiology, as well as a new obstetrical unit that's a lockdown secure unit that'll solve some of the problems we've got with our old facility right now.
Yeah, so some new stuff going on. I'm curious. You know, what were some of the driving factors in going for some of these big? I mean, this is a big expansion. Something close on the order of $40 million.
Yeah, the total project costs are going to be right around $39 million, and the borough sold some revenue bonds that the hospital is responsible for paying for about $29 million of that, and then another $10 million we're paying for out of our plant replacement expansion fund.
Mm-hmm. And so this is something that we've heard a lot over the last few years, is this idea that in order to stay competitive and to stay sort of financially solvent, that the hospital is going to be needing to be able to provide more services, and this is a pretty huge move in that direction.
Yeah, cardiology is one area where we just haven't really had very broad depth of services here on the peninsula. So this will help solve that issue.
So we talk about specifically the cardiology part and the cath lab. What is that? What are some of the new services and what sort of gaps will that start to fill?
Well, the cath lab, obviously people can go in get cardiac caths. Whereas before they have to go to Anchorage for that. And, we've done a lot with cancer over the last 3 or 4 years. We've got Dr. Halligan, Dr. Bloom there with radiation oncology. We've got our own oncologist on site now, Dr. Mullins, with our infusion center. So we have a pretty broad scope of oncology care now. We've got some pretty good stroke capabilities now in our emergency department and our hospitalist, our electronic ICU up on the floor. But cardiology is the area that we've sort of been behind on, and this will help solve some of that.
And then also on the obstetric side, you mentioned there were some safety issues. Talk a little bit about how this new wing will work and what will be provided there.
So our current OB unit is in the old original part of the hospital, back when Dr. Isaac and Dr. Gady originally built the place. That's still
a day or two ago.
It was a while back, and that's still where OB is at. We've outgrown the space that originally they were in, and so what that's caused is some infant security issues with our new river tower being on the other side of OB. We've expanded into the space between those two buildings, and what that's caused us to have to do is have a whole bunch of different lockdown doors. It makes it inconvenient for people traveling between the river tower and the main hospital. They've got to go outside and slip and slide. So, those are two of the big issues. Plus, it's just an old unit and needed upgrade. So the new OB unit is going to be on the second floor of the new building and will be just a complete lockdown unit. So the security will not be an issue.
Have units like that, and I'm asking this kind of blindly, and I know that the administration is kind of more your forte, but I'm curious, you know, if for my own, for let's say my own mom, who I won't out her and say how many years ago I was in that part of my hospital back home, but what's changed in the last, you know, couple of decades, and especially as you mentioned with the unit here at Central Peninsula Hospital going back so far, what's changed? Security, one of those things, but.
Yeah, there's a lot changed. Well, for one, the room sizes are now required to be quite a bit bigger than our current rooms are. They're a lot smaller than what code would require for an OB room. The infant security issues become more of a big deal over the past several years. The Joint Commission is the accrediting body that comes and surveys our hospital every 3 years or so. And for the last three surveys, over the past 9 years, we've been cited for our layout of our unit, and we've had to make changes each survey to appease them. And so we're kind of at the end of what we could do with what we've got.
There becomes a point of diminishing returns when you're talking about renovation, and all of a sudden it just makes more sense to go big and go new.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of on that same note, you know, these are not, we're talking about, you know, $40 million ish in that neighborhood renovations. These are plans that come together sort of over the long term. I'm curious, sort of in a broad sense, how do you come up with these sort of long-term plans? What are there economic indicators? Are there, you know, what are the indicators that help make you decide that, all right, this is the way that we need to go, and here's how it's kind of going to work out?
Well, on the OB front, we've been working for about 6 years trying to solve this problem. And this was actually the fifth or sixth iteration of plans that we've attempted to develop to make a new OB unit. And each one before this is just, we've run into impossibilities either on the financial side or just logistics side. And so the other need for the cardiology unit, we decided to combine those two programs. And obviously cardiology is a pretty good revenue stream, and that coupled with the new OB service line actually made financial sense. And so that's what made it work.
Is the dollars and cents is and mapping that out.
Yeah.
And that's something that you know, I'm not, I'm in journalism. I'm clearly not a numbers guy. That's something that I have a kind of a hard time wrapping my head around is sort of this numbers game and piecing that out, because these are plans that are going to affect the sort of the potential solvency and hopefully the continued solvency of the hospital for 10, 20, 30 years to come.
Yeah.
So it's a big puzzle to put together.
Yep.
For sure. Again, Rick Davis, CEO of Central Peninsula Hospital, with us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you have any questions about what's going on out at the hospital or healthcare sort of in general, give us a call, 283-8414. Again, 283-8414. And so we're talking a little bit about finances. You know, I was in kind of doing a little bit of homework and bringing myself up to speed on things going on at the hospital, and talking about the need for all these new revenues to do some of these projects. You know, one of the more recent headlines going back a little bit, you know, a few months back, was we saw this very precipitous drop in income at the hospital, and that really raised some eyebrows. And I know that at the hospital, maybe for the folks who run the numbers, it maybe wasn't quite the jaw-dropping thing that it was as a headline in the news, but it was still some pretty big numbers there that we saw in terms of revenue dropping from a portion of 2016 to a portion of 2017. You know, it was like 90%. And it was, like I said, a pretty big number to sort of read on the page. But talk a little bit about how that drop occurred, what that means for the hospital, if that should be a cause for concern.
Sure. So to start out with, it was a little bit misleading. That was not, even though the headline did say revenue drop, it was actually net income drop. Revenue dropped a little bit. Net income dropped quite a bit. And that had several reasons. Probably the biggest reason, we did an electronic health record upgrade at the end, a year ago in September 2016, and we fully knew that was going to be a a huge hiccup in our operations, and it was, as expected. We were not able to bill for quite a bit of our services for a few months, and there was a lot of expense associated with the implementation of that new system, a tremendous lot of expense. And as you might remember, I think we asked for $6 million just to buy the product. So
right.
Then additionally, with the new specialty clinics building that had gone online, we had a whole lot of new depreciation expense that went against our net income. So it's kind of a little bit of a paper shuffle there. So again, our revenue dropped a little bit, probably mostly having to do with the Epic implementation, our electronic health record. We did see volumes drop a little bit last year too. Not sure what that was all about. They've recovered nicely. We're very busy now. In fact, we've been busier here the last couple of months than we've been probably ever. So,
yeah, that was an interesting thing to see, because again, when you look just sort of, as you said, the numbers on paper, it can really be kind of eye popping a little bit to see those. In terms of some of the other factors, I know that I could maybe stick with the e-records, because that was such a big project. What we hear a lot is that switching to electronic records is supposed to save a lot of money and save a lot of time. Is that how it's been working out? Because it sounds like the implementation maybe didn't go caused some headaches and is a hurdle to clear. But after that's been in place for a while, does that represent cost savings and efficiency and all the things that we hear about?
No,
that's the short answer.
That's the short answer. And really, the benefit of the electronic health record is more of a better care issue. It allows providers to electronically share information about a patient without having to, pick up the telephone, leave a voicemail, get a fax. If a patient is transferred from our hospital to Providence or Alaska Regional, they're both on the same health record as we are. So your x-rays are at the fingertips of a physician in Anchorage, and vice versa. If somebody has a procedure done there, they end up back in our hospital or come into our ER later on. The records are available to each practitioner.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess maybe in terms of the logistics of serving a patient, maybe things work out a little bit, but administering all that infrastructure is maybe part of the hang-up?
Yeah, it's definitely doesn't save money. It's more expensive, and that's never been there's never been any secret there. It costs more.
Yeah.
But it's just better patient care.
Yeah. And that of course is the goal. I have a question coming in, and this is I suppose as good a time as any to get into this topic. From Assemblymember Willie Dunn, he asks, "What can be done to make comprehensive and coordinated addiction recovery services available to the rest of the peninsula?" Of course, Mr. Dunn hailing from the Southern Peninsula, so he's talking about Seward, Homer, but coordinating some of those efforts in a problem that most certainly is peninsula wide.
Well, it sure is, and as Assemblyman Dunn knows, I mean we're working on a real broad program here locally. We're just opened our care transitions unit here a couple months ago, which is a detox unit. Of course, we've had Serenity House for several years now, which is an inpatient rehab unit. Soon to open is our transitional housing, which is going to be next door to the care transition unit, and that's a long-term living facility where people who've gone through the recovery program at Serenity House can then live there, learn daily life skills, and have some supervision for about 6 to 12 months, keep them in the outpatient program, and they'll actually be doing some of the cooking and cleaning for the care transitions unit, the detox unit. So there'll be some peer sharing. It's really a nice full spectrum recovery program that we've got here locally. How do we expand that peninsula wide? Well, I guess that'll be our next hurdle to to jump.
Yeah, conversations, I'm sure, always ongoing with that. You mentioned Serenity House as one sort of part of an overall effort to treat and provide recovery options and treat addiction and those sorts of things. So clearly we know from any number of indicators that there has been a spike in that. I guess, how does one get into these programs? What is it tied to? Is it just a open bed and first come, first serve, or?
There's several ways you can enter the programs. I mean, the Serenity House is a after detox is done and someone's wanting to recover, then it's as first come, first serve as available beds are there. But that's one of the parameters for Serenity House is someone has to be ready for recovery. It's not a place where people could be forced to go or something like that. The care transition, the detox center, there's several ways you can access that. I don't have the phone number handy, but there's a phone number you can call, self-refer. A physician can refer you. Someone from the ER might get referred there. Or you can actually walk up, knock on the door, and, perhaps be accepted into the program.
Yeah, so I kind of bring it up because as people have a broader understanding of the sort of the degree to which this problem affects people and what it takes to overcome some of these issues, we move way beyond, the sort of the old thought of get them into a halfway house and they're kind of on their own. It's a multi-step process and it sounds like facilities at Central Peninsula Hospital are growing and expanding to kind of reflect more understanding and unfortunately the growth of the issue.
Yeah, we're the only community in the state that has the complete spectrum of care from, basically from the ER, clear through detox, recovery, the transitional living, and then the ongoing outpatient maintenance. So a lot of other communities are watching us. The state's watching us. We've gotten some grants from the state to put a couple of these programs together. So I'm really proud of what Dr. Sellers and her staff have done there.
So in being, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of a pilot program maybe that other places can look to, are there other places outside that CPH is looking to develop these programs and get these facilities online?
Well, Christy Sellers is our director of the program, and she's pretty well aware of programs across the country, and she's really done a good job modeling some of those and piloting some of the transitional housing. For instance, we did a 2-year project with a couple of houses that we have where we had folks live there, supervised, keep them in their outpatient treatment. And she was able to demonstrate a very lower recidivism rate than people who didn't have that transitional housing available to them.
Yeah, as we've been talking about, it is a long process, and that's a very important part of that process. I'm curious in the discussions and the plans to bring some of these services to CPH, was there, I guess in my mind, I'm imagining seeing like this spike in emergency room visits to sort of provide the same care, and maybe that had something to do with examining it as a broader issue that needed a bit more attention?
It does. Obviously this is a costly service for us to provide. We do it as a community service just to be a good community citizen. There's definitely the problem has escalated over the past several years, and the ER's seen more of that, and the hope is that maybe we'll make a dent in that, bring it down a little bit.
Yeah, and provide, as you say, community services that more and more people are in need of all the time. Tuned to the Kenai Conversation this morning. We're speaking with Central Peninsula Hospital CEO Rick Davis. A lot of things going on at the hospital right now and into next year, and of course a lot of broader questions about sort of healthcare in general. Another question coming in via the internet right now from Rosemary Kimball. She says, seniors are the fastest growing segment of the population on the peninsula. When will the hospital get a geriatrician? Not a bad question.
Well, That is not a bad question, and I don't really have an answer to it.
Not an easy one to answer, right?
But that's absolutely true. And not only is the senior population our fastest growing segment, the senior population on the Kenai is the fastest growing over 65 segment in the state. So we're graying even faster than the rest of the state. So it's definitely a problem. And, you know, some of the things we're doing, the cath lab's a good example of that. As people get older, we have more needs for cardiology services. We're working on becoming a joint commission certified joint center of excellence in orthopedics. We get old, our hips and knees break down.
You don't even have to be that old. I'm here to tell.
Yeah.
Some of those Alaska outdoor activities.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, we're trying to prepare for it. That's kind of why we're trying to gear up some of these programs.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that someone like me, you know, you don't think about necessarily what plans have to go into looking at such a broad thing. As what's the age group and what are those projections going out? Those are really broad questions that have to all go into this sort of general calculus for how to best deliver services and what to anticipate.
We had to do a certificate of need application to the state to get our cath lab approved, and that was one of the points that we made in our CON application, was that we do have a fast-growing over 65 population, and we need these services down here.
Yeah, a certificate of need is something, of course, that we see sort of as like the kickoff anytime a project like one of these is announced or planned for. Are there any other certificates of need that the hospital has out or is entertaining or thinking about?
No, this is our the only one we've got in the hopper right now.
This is the big one for now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it certainly is a big one. Again, CEO from Central Peninsula Hospital, Rick Davis, joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you would like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. And talking about some of the idea that there are more services available at Central Peninsula Hospital. There are more services available at private medical facilities on the peninsula as well. And I'm curious, again, as we're kind of looking at a lot of these topics in a broader context of the possibility of decreasing revenues and decreasing reimbursements from things like Medicare and Medicaid, is that competition? I've heard you speak on this a number of times at assembly meetings and things, but talk about the nature of having some competition here in the local marketplace.
Well, obviously competition's a good thing. Keeps us all sharp. As far as us expanding programs, I mean, part of what's driving that is revenues are good right now. You know, healthcare reimbursement's pretty good in Alaska. We're doing well. And everyone's doing well, and that's why you see a lot of things popping up. At some point, that may change. I hope it does. I mean, healthcare in the United States in general, but particularly Alaska, is very, very expensive, and things need to come down. But when that does happen, we will probably be, you know, what you see is what you get. Once the revenues drop, we'll have a hard time building new programs, and so what we've been doing at Central Peninsula for the past few years is trying to roll our excess revenue back into new programs, bringing services to the peninsula that we haven't had before. Dr. Humphreys and Kenai Spine was a good first example of that. He's been, you know, very successful and a great surgeon and a great program. Again, the oncology services that we've got now, now the cardiology program is going to be, you know, we're going to have some pretty good services here that we didn't have.
Yeah, it seems like the focus the last many years has been, you know, what can we provide here to not just shore up revenues at the hospital and provide more services to in turn get those revenues, but a sort of an inherent part of that is what can we provide here to save folks from going to Anchorage, to going to Seattle, etc., to get that same stuff that they could get here. That seems to have been at least a little bit of a part of it. I know it all has to add up at the end, but
well, it's a huge part of it, and I mean, people are going to get a heart cath somewhere, and so keeping those dollars here on the peninsula is always better than having them go to Anchorage or Seattle.
And that's something maybe, I don't want to say slightly off topic, but maybe just a little bit, something that keeps coming across this desk and folks who have heard the program in more recent weeks have heard this topic come up a little bit more, is this idea of medical tourism on the peninsula and the idea that, well, you know, as you just said, somebody, you're going to go out and you're going to need this procedure or you're going to need this service anyway. Hey, why not the Kenai Peninsula? Is there any level of that that goes into some of the planning for these things?
We've done a lot of thinking about that and planning for it. Again, back to Dr. Humphreys and Kenai Spine, he has had a lot of thoughts about that. He does do a lot of surgery on patients from Anchorage, Kodiak, Bethel. I mean, people, you know, when you have a good program, people will travel to it. So we're working on that with him. Our joint program, again, we're trying to become a certified center of excellence there. And for that purpose, you know, we would like to be able to bring people from Anchorage down here and do their joint replacements instead of the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm curious, of course, you know, handling things internally and making sure that those are quality services is the first priority. I'm curious, is there any work with, you know, like the Tourism and Marketing Council to market what services are available? Is there some work with outside organizations to kind of promote this stuff?
We have not got to that point yet, no.
Is that something that you foresee, or is that something that the hospital would rather just kind of focus on the medical things? And if that's something that is sort of ancillary, then all right, that's fine, but not going to be the main focus?
I think that's accurate.
we'll take that. We'll take that. People want to go to the hospital to get cared for, not to... It's tough to think about going on vacation and the hospital at the same time, at least for me. Yeah. Tune to the Kenai Conversation this morning. We're joined with Central Peninsula Hospital CEO Rick Davis. I had a couple questions from you. We'd love to have those keep rolling in. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. But we're getting to the bottom of the hour here, and I think that would be a good time to take a little break. I'm going to refill coffee and do all that stuff. We're going to get back for the second half of the program, hopefully talk a little bit more about healthcare and some of the broader issues and some of the other things that we are seeing sort of in more national headlines and what sorts of things we can expect and how those might affect things at Central Peninsula Hospital here on the Kenai. Again, tune to the Kenai Conversation this morning here on KDLL. Going to take a quick break. Stay with us. Thanks for staying with us. Speaking with Central Peninsula CEO Rick Davis this morning, I've been tackling a lot of things that are going on at the hospital, the new cath lab, the obstetrics wing, all the major projects that are going on at Central Peninsula Hospital in hopes and plans of preparing for the future and being able to continue a wide variety of medical services here on the Kenai Peninsula. Wanted to get to a follow-up. We had a question in the first half of the program from Rosemary, and she follows up. She says, as a PS, my husband died at the hospital and the nurses and surroundings couldn't have been nicer to both of us. They have a program that no one dies alone. Fortunately, I could be there except going home to feed the animals. The nurses gave me coffee from their break room, which at 5 a.m., she says, was pretty stout to drive on. The attitudes at the hospital is one of the major reasons I wouldn't leave the area. And so I guess that's a pretty easy one to kind of tee up for you, Rick. What are some of the programs there for folks who are facing a really hard time, end-of-life care or, you know, traumatic injuries, those sorts of things? I'm sure the hospital does have a lot of programs to connect with those people and make sure they have what they need.
Yeah, well, Rosemary brings up a couple of programs there in her comments. Very nice comments. Thank you, Rosemary. But we do have a program, No One Dies Alone. It's a volunteer program where we have folks who are available to come sit with someone who may or not have family or anyone to be there at that time. So we have a group of people who are very happy to do that. The other thing is we're a Plane Tree facility, and Plane Tree is a patient-centered model of care, and it's a group out of they're actually from Chicago is where their headquarters is, but we participate in that all of our employees go through an orientation, a plane tree orientation, and it's just a multi-dimensional program to help the patient feel like they're part of their care program and their family.
Yeah, keeping those connections and keeping, I guess, again, for maybe lack of a better term, keeping some humanity in it at all points possible, so it doesn't feel so clinical and is just a thing that you have to go through to bring some comfort to it. Yeah. We've got another question coming in here, and this is something we didn't get to maybe specifically in the first half of the program, but it's something as we talk about and as we discuss in here, especially you know at the assembly level about revenue bonds and expansions at the hospital. We hear a lot of concerns about this, and here's the question. It says, given the hospital's financial challenges these days, how can they afford all these expansions? And I'll open that one up to you.
Well, as we talked earlier, you know, we aren't really having any financial challenges right now. We're doing real well financially. We have a total of about $82 million worth of bonds outstanding. We do have a few general obligation bonds that are still out there, and those are bonds that the taxpayers voted to obligate themselves for back in 2005. And in 2010, we actually got to a level of revenue where we could afford to make those bond payments for the taxpayers. So 2010, we took those in-house, and since that time, we've made about $23 million worth of bond payments for the taxpayers. We didn't have to do that. We could, though, and we did, just to be good community citizens. And so we've continued to do that. And since that time, we've issued the two different sets of revenue bonds. And as again, our revenue stream is very robust and able to support these revenue bonds without any problem.
I want to use that as kind of a way to dovetail into talking about, again, the sort of the broader healthcare picture. And I mean that in specific reference to things like Medicare and Medicaid, because we've seen a lot in the headlines, a lot of speculation with some of the tax proposals in Washington, D.C. that might happen as a result of some of those tax proposals. Already speculation, of course, that Medicare and Medicaid and some of these social programs might have to be cut in order to pay for these tax programs. I'm sure that has to go into the calculus at some point, but that has to also make it very difficult to project what your revenues are going to be in the future to pay down these bonds.
Well, it does, but we do our best to sort of see the future and anticipate those downturns. And as we budget going forward, we have budgeted downturns in both Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement. We know that's coming. And so, but even with that, we're still in a good, healthy spot financially.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious from the position of a hospital administrator, from a CEO's position, when you read the paper, when you see the news, especially again the national headlines and what seems like major changes that people are at least discussing, if not that are well on their way. From your perch, from your office, what are the things that jump out at you? What are the things that you're thinking about and that you're trying to anticipate as you go through your day to day here in Soldotna?
Well, I mean, those are the things that we look at.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah. And again, we expect to see reimbursement drop over time. These bonds that we've sold recently have been 15 and even 10-year bonds. So, you know, it's not like a 30-year mortgage where you're obligated for, you know, 30 years out. I mean, the ones that we sold for the River Tower were 15-year bonds, and that was 3 years ago. And then the bonds that we just recently sold, I think there was a few 15 and mostly 10-year bonds there. So we certainly anticipate 10 to 15, you know, at least 10 more good years before the bottom may fall out.
Right. And that helps too, I mean, the plans of course will be in effect and have an effect long term, but the actual financing and how it gets built and all those things are relatively speaking kind of short term. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Moving or kind of staying with that a little bit, you know, I've had former borough mayor Mike Navarre, one of his sort of pet topics for a long time, as long as I was interviewing him in that capacity, was healthcare and the continuous march upward of healthcare costs and the problems that that poses here locally. Again, as we mentioned, with reimbursement rates going down and insurance companies, of course, always wanting to pay as little as possible. A question that I posed to him some time ago, and I'd be curious of what your take is on this, is when everybody talks about the idea of lowering healthcare costs, what they're really saying is we're going to spend less money. And when you spend less money on that, something's going to happen. Either you have to get super efficient to provide the same amount of service for less money, or somebody's going to fall through the cracks. And so does that become folks who can't afford care? Do they get left out? Does that become folks who are just on that line where maybe they can afford insurance, maybe they can't? Do we finally decide that the insurance companies are going to be the losers for once? How would you kind of frame that up?
Well, it's very complicated problem, and it is a problem, but healthcare costs are basically a function of utilization times price. And as you mentioned earlier, Shaylin, I mean, drive around, there's a lot more stuff out there than there used to be. I don't go to Anchorage that often anymore, but when I drive through Anchorage, I'm just aghast at all the new medical stuff that's out there. So
yeah.
You're seeing an increase of utilization just by the increased supply of services. So that's part of the equation, and then price is obviously the other part. You can lower your prices and help a little bit, but if utilization keeps going up, because healthcare cost really is what your premiums are. If you've got insurance, you're paying a premium, that's your healthcare cost.
Right.
And so for most people, you know, that's a little different topic, but for a lot of people that do have insurance, I mean, the price of the service doesn't matter because they're not paying the bill, so their insurance company's paying it.
Yeah, it's essentially a fixed cost for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's a monthly premium. I will say, I just read in the paper front page of I think it was the Daily News, or I can't remember if it was the Clarion or the Daily News, that State Insurance Commissioner Lori Wingheier talked about Premera refunding the state $20 million for premiums last year. And in Lori's statement was that Alaska is now the fourth highest healthcare cost in the country as opposed to first. We've held that perch of first place for a long time.
For a long time, yeah.
So, you know, maybe we're starting to see a little bit of relief.
A little bit of relief. And is that something that you would expect to hold and maintain, that, or is that just kind of a blip on the radar due to sort of extenuating factors over the last couple of years, and, you know, whether it be the Affordable Care Act or something else?
Well, I hope it's not a blip. I hope it's a trend. I think we're seeing, you know, in our case, we've implemented quite a few changes to our health plan. We've increased deductibles. We've increased copays. We've encouraged pre-certification of services, and a lot of insurance plans in Alaska are kind of what we call a 1980s insurance plan. It's 80-20. The member pays, you know, nothing towards the premium cost, and you're not going to get much health care cost relief with a 1980s insurance plan. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing more health plans, you know, put some of those changes in, and that's probably making people be more wiser in their healthcare decision making.
This is a again kind of a broad question and sort of a ripped from the headlines kind of a thing, but I want to ask you, because you're in a unique position to have a take on it, is again this idea that folks, as you mentioned, you know, we talked about, you know, if you have insurance, you're paying that fixed cost. You don't have maybe as much skin in the game as if you were paying dollar for dollar exactly for the care that you're getting. And so one of the things we hear is that folks need to be more educated about the services they're getting, what those services cost, and those sorts of things. But as you and I were talking before the program, it's not exactly like going to McDonald's and ordering off the menu. And I guess the big question, kind of a dumb question, is how come there isn't just a price list? How come you can't sort of shop for healthcare?
Well, I mean, you You can, to some extent. We do have our financial counselors do their best to tell someone what they expect a procedure to cost within a range. But when you go into the operating room, the same procedure is going to take longer, shorter. You're going to use different group of supplies based on which doctor it was. The doctors actually are separate from the hospital. A lot of them, you're going to get a bill from them. We don't know what they charge. So I hate to sound defensive or evasive about it, but it just is hard to just say, okay, a knee scope is going to cost $10,000 because, you know, again, it doesn't, you know, how many minutes in the OR did you use? How many staples did the surgeon use? There's so many variables, it's just hard. But we do try to give a range.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a commodity from which you can base stable prices over the long term like you can in so many other sectors of you know, retail or whatever else.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Wanted to, speaking with Rick Davis, CEO of Central Peninsula Hospital, this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you have healthcare questions about some of the bigger projects that are going on at the hospital right now, give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. You can drop us a line on Facebook as well. Just check us out there. KDLL 91.9 FM is the way to our Facebook page. Wanted to get back kind of locally. And again, we were talking a little bit before the program. When I speak with folks who are in the know about economic trends here on the Kenai Peninsula and have their eye forward on what to expect, you know, healthcare is always sort of at the top of the list for what folks can expect in terms of future jobs and job stability and well-paying jobs. And we've talked about that a little bit over the last almost hour now, the idea that we have a growing senior population, and in particular on the Kenai, it's growing faster than other places in the state. So all those things point to a healthy healthcare industry, at least in terms of jobs. And I'm curious, what kind of situation is happening at Central Peninsula Hospital in terms of maybe working with the college to make sure that those jobs are filled? And are there major challenges in getting some of those jobs filled as demand continues to grow?
Well, we do work very closely with the college. Their nursing program uses our hospital as their to rotate nursing students through. We work with them on their PCA program. So that's great to have that resource here locally. There are a few positions that we, some of the more specialized nursing positions, or maybe some IT positions, things like that, where we have a little bit of a hard time getting staffed sometimes. But we do have a pretty stable workforce here, I think, partly just because, you know, we try to hire locally as much as we can. And so, you know, if someone lives on the peninsula and they work at the hospital, it's a pretty good long-term probability that they're going to stay, as opposed to Anchorage has a little bit of a more of an itinerant population, with the base being there. The hospitals there have spouses of someone who maybe is on in one of the armed forces, and so they're here for 3-4 years and gone, so they have a little bit more turnover. But we struggle in a few of the specialized areas. But
as I'm sure any hospital would, especially as you get to remote areas of Alaska, and we're not even that remote, but yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, in talking about, again, you know, this idea of sort of trying to plan for the long term as best you can, Has there been any, I mean, with the growth of some of these services at the hospital, has there been commensurate growth in jobs and employment?
Yeah, we have about 820 employees right now, and that's actually held steady pretty much for the last year or year and a half, maybe close to 2 years. We'll probably add a few more employees once the cath lab opens. We're working very closely right now with Alaska Heart Institute. And Dr. David Chambers is a cardiologist that's here on our campus right now. And we're working very closely with him, and John McDonough is another cardiologist with Alaska Heart Institute, to develop our cardiology program, because You know, buying a cath lab, throwing it in is a very small piece of a cardiology program. It's a big, big project to put that program together. There's a lot of training that has to be done with our staff. Some new staff will have to be brought in, cath lab techs, things like that. So we'll grow a little bit with the cath lab.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent news there because, again, you know, as we've talked again for a number of years now, I've been having these conversations about how important it is for hospitals to be able to provide more services. Do you suppose that that's universally true? Is it, I mean, it's not universally possible necessarily the way it is here, but is that universally true that hospitals, in order to thrive in a market where we know that revenues, federal revenues are going to be down and it's going to be a little bit dicey in the coming years, does every hospital need to do this? Is that even possible?
Well, not really. I mean, we're in a little bit of a unique situation in that if we were next door to a bigger community with a larger hospital, we probably wouldn't put a cath lab in because, you know, if there's a bigger hospital with a cath lab that's 20 miles down the road, probably that's probably okay. Same, you know, with joint replacements I talked about earlier. You can drive 20 miles, get a procedure done, and go back home. To go 160, 70 miles, especially for the cardiac stuff, I mean, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, if the helicopter's able to fly, you know, you've got a better chance. But it's a lot better if you can just wheel somebody from the ER down to the cath lab and open up a vessel and that's what we're going to be able to do.
Yeah, well, you know, especially in terms of the cardiac stuff, that drive to Anchorage in the wintertime can be tough enough on the old ticker as it is,
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of winding down, not a whole lot of time left in the program. Wanted to ask a little bit about, you know, we've sort of touched on a little bit, but sort of in that same vein as, you know, what do hospitals need to do? Seems like this sort of this competition for healthcare dollars. Is that a fair way to frame it in this ever increasing, or this situation where the dollars are fewer and fewer? Is there an increased competition for fewer dollars among healthcare facilities?
Yeah, I think that's legit.
Yeah. And so I guess just to kind of follow up on that is, this is, you know, the expansion is one way for Central Peninsula Hospital to compete in that environment. What are the other ways that it can compete and compete successfully?
Well, the best way we can compete is just to provide better quality of services. And you know, again, we work on the culture of our staff. You know, like I talked about Plane Tree before. We're working on a culture of becoming a highly reliable organization, which is a little bit of a buzzword, but it's really a way of providing care in a more highly reliable manner. So as we, you know, move forward, our goal is really to just be able to provide a higher level of care and a higher level of service, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of that.
And I, of course, you know, I wanted to ask, because I usually ask when we're on to topics sort of like this, what are the next big plans? But gee whiz, it seems it's kind of hard to top a bigger plan than a new obstetrics wing, a new cath lab. Kind of hard to top those. But anything else?
Well, this plan solves a lot of our pretty intermediate term needs. One of the big problems with our hospital has been we've just got one corridor through the hospital from the emergency department to the OR or the nursing floor. So if you come through the ER, have to go to an emergency surgery in the OR, you're getting wheeled right down the carpeted hallway past grandma and the grandkids and, you know, visitors. And this project will complete our back-of-house corridor, which we've been working on for several years. So there'll be a behind-the-scenes corridor for patients and staff, and then that corridor that's there now will be the public corridor.
Yeah, a lot more privacy, a lot more security and safety out there too.
Absolutely.
Well, very good. Well, Rick Davis, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of what I'm sure is an incredibly busy schedule to be with us this morning and talk about all these issues facing not just Central Peninsula Hospital, but things that we're talking about nationwide, area-wide, all these sorts of things. Thanks again for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.